passionate about broadcast media? Become a part of Broadcast Plaza, the number one broadcast media server on Discord, to discuss all about it with fellow community members and industry professionals, including your humble narrator. Broadcast Plaza, this is the place. Join today by going to the link in this episode's description or by logging on to discord.gg/broadcastplaza.
This is a Zaglund original podcast.
Today on the Zachary and Peaches Show.
It's a tale of two talking class pets. We're kicking off the second half of season two with a visit to my home state of Florida and a Fort Lauderdale Elementary School, home of Leo. We'll be discussing about the latest Adam Sandler animated movie that's on Netflix.
And it's a competition between the faithful and the traitors as Alan Cumming hosts this game of lying, backstabbing, and trickery that takes place in the Scottish Highlands.
All this week, January 16th, 2023.
Wait a minute, isn't it 2024?
Ah, you're right. Yeah, all this week, January 16th, 2024. Let's just start the show. Just start it.
Connecting from Orlando and Baltimore, it's all about animation, autism, and everything else. This is the Zachary and Peaches Show with Adrian Mata and Emma Settles.
Welcome to the Zachary and Peaches Show, folks. I'm Adrian Mata.
And I'm Emma Settles.
And after a little bit of that shellacking over what year this is, we are happy to be kicking off season 2B, the second half of season 2, and we got a little bit more to talk about throughout the season, and all leads up to the Oscars, and of course we will, you know, with our predictions for who will win Best Anime Feature, and of course we'll also talk about who won the award when the time comes. So obviously that's a little over 2 months away. So that being said, Emma, how was your holiday season?
It was interesting. It was definitely a little bit rocky because, you know, as you know, my family's been going through a bit of a rough time, and we have been for a while. And we have a hospitalized relative who is still in the hospital. At the same token, though, we made do, and we managed to have a relatively decent Christmas, even given the current circumstances that we're all under. So, yeah, overall, it was for... It wasn't as big of a disaster as I thought it was going to be. Let's just say that. And in general, I'm very thankful for that. Sort of, you know, apart from the holidays and all of that, a lot's been going on in Peach's Canyon, so to speak. I've been working on a lot of commissions lately, which has been as incredibly exhilarating and fun and exciting, but also insanely stressful. I am also, I actually got behind the wheel of a car for the first time, on New Year's Day, I think. And I've already logged almost 3 hours of driving since then. So that being said, yeah, I'm finally getting, you know, mustering up the courage to actually start seriously driving. And so that being said, I'm very proud of myself. So yeah, I've been working a lot. I've been driving a lot. And yeah, that's pretty much a good summary of everything that's been going on. But see if there's anything in particular that I'm missing off the top of my head. Oh, I'm reporting this a few few weeks too early, I suppose. It's too early, I suppose. But I'm finally going to my first furry convention. I got some money from an extended family member for Christmas, so I figured, you know what, I'm gonna get some tickets and I'm gonna go to this con. So yeah, if anybody who's listening happens to be at Furthermore the weekend of March, I believe 8th through the 10th, hopefully you'll see me there. I'll be in suit, most likely, so, you know, yeah, if you see me there, just go, hey, Peaches, and, you know, I'll know you're either a fan of the show or of my work or both. Hopefully both, but, you know, I'll take whatever. But, yeah, I mean, just in general, even with some of the hardship that has been going on in my life, at the same token, though, I'm still trying to face... I'm still trying to focus primarily more on the positives right now, because, you know, it's so easy to get caught up in and, you know, exclusively focusing on the pain and on the negativity. So that being said, I want to just take as many opportunities as I can to think about everything that's been going right in my life right now. And so far, you know, 2024 has, for the most part, been pretty decent to me, and hopefully it'll stay that way. You know, don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, so to speak, but at the very least, I'm thankful that things have been, at least for the most part, on my end, relatively okay. So, yeah, that being said, how about you, Adrian? How have things been at Universal?
It was nice while it lasted, well, at least during the holiday season. Like, things were kind of slow, and then everything started to pick up, and then, of course, everything just ramped, and I did get some... I was pretty much working, like, almost, like, every single day out of the 2 weeks, where, you know, for, I think, between Christmas and New Year's, and I had a little, had some moments of overstimulation here and there while working. I think it was, that's all right, but, especially evident when it came down to the New Year's Eve shift that I had to work, and that was, of course, the Marvel character dinner, and we were, you know, we were going to do both, MCD and then switch it back over to Cafe 4, and then was decided we were not going to do that. We were just going to close right after we concluded the Marvel character dinner service for the evening. So, yeah, they reassigned, you know, every single one of us who had been working the service to other areas that were being supervised under Cafe 4. And so I wasn't one of those. Had a bit of an emotional breakdown, I think, after we got everything closed down and ready to go for New Year's Day, and pretty much just kind of bare my soul, so to speak, to my supervisors about what I have been going through the past few days or so leading up to it. So, but things are at the very least back to normal now. But things have slowed down. Thankfully
it will pick up.
Yeah. Yeah, but it will pick back up, I think sometime either February, I think February, you know, especially when we have Mardi Gras going on between February and April, so there is that. By the way, we have, there is some information available on Universal Orlando's Mardi Gras festivities at UniversalOrlando.com, so please check that out. It is included with park admission as far as I'm concerned. But there is pretty much that, you know, as far as I'm concerned with my day job over there. So, Yeah, but there have been some other things that happened while we were away. I was the first customer to enter this particular Zaxby's that's near my house, just a couple blocks away from the Starbucks that I usually frequent, and sometimes, usually it's for editing this podcast here, but I was the first guest in line. I have this deck of, and now I have like a deck of deals of sorts. I think it's like a 52 playing card like deck of coupons that I could use, you know, I think at some point in February, on February 5th or so, I'm gonna have to check the calendar here, so probably on February, not on February 5th, so maybe on February 5th, so I'm not really sure, but sometime in February, I'm gonna start a little something on social media. I'm gonna call it Zaxby's Sunday, I think. So it's gonna be pretty much, myself just using up the coupon for that particular week, just using up the particular coupon that's eligible to be utilized for that week at that particular location, and I'm just gonna enjoy a little bit of what Zaxby's has to offer over the course of those 52 weeks. So that's gonna be a little bit exciting. So look out for that on my personal Instagram at adriamata.26. And I will say, this is not an endorsement of by any means by the people who own Zaxby's. But just something I wanted to do. Considering that I haven't, and I'll probably show you like the deck of cards at some point during our break this evening. During our break during this show this week here. So there is that, and I also went to a new place over at Disney Springs. It's called Summer House on the Lake, and it's a relatively new place. They had when I visited, they'd only been open for like 3 weeks. They actually have a cookie bar. They have this thing called a cookie bar where they sell like cocktails and coffee and other stuff. But they also have cookies and bars as well. I went over to the main restaurant there, and I had myself a nice. I had myself a chicken sandwich there, a fried chicken sandwich there with some shoestring fries there, and so. It was okay. The flavor profile was a little bit off, but at the very least, I was nice about it with my waiter that particular evening that I went. So in any case, I got a little pixie dust in the form of a discount for the trouble there with the chicken sandwich, But yeah, it's a really nice restaurant to go to. Some great selections there. Check it out over there. Hopefully you'll have a bit of a better time with the food there than I did. But I'll probably will the next time I come over there. I'll probably try one of their salads at some point. So Summer House on the Lake over at Disney Springs, Lake Buena Vista, Florida, near Orlando, near Walt Disney World. Do check it out whenever you're in the area. So pretty much about it.
Sounds like you had a pretty eventful break there.
Yeah. yeah, foodie wise, yes. So it's a little fun time there, and I also have I also have something exciting coming up as well, but I won't announce that till probably like next week's edition. So all right.
Yeah, so you might
keeping you on your toes there.
Yes, keep me on my toes. Keep me on my toes, Adrian.
Yes.
I'm excited.
Yeah, so you'll find out next week what that might be. So we'll see. Or actually maybe I'll probably won't announce it next week. Probably after the fact on the I think on the January 30th edition, but either way, you'll have to find out. You'll find out when I'm ready to share it. All right. Yeah. So, there is that. So we've got two housekeeping notes there, and I will throw in a third one here. As of this recording, the Critics' Choice Awards, the 29th. edition. The 29th ceremony of the Critics' Choice Awards is going on at this particular time when we are recording this. So, yeah, so at some, I feel like at some point during the show, they will announce probably best animated feature during the broadcast here. And Chelsea Handler is the host, and I'm just looking at the TV here. I have the TV on, and just kind of really taking a look, trying to keep both eyes on the, trying to keep one eye on the laptop that I have, and then the other one on the TV, just trying to see when they're going to announce it. So, at some point during the podcast, when we do find out who wins best aiming feature, you'll know why. But you will find out after the fact, after all that is said and done there. So there is that. So, here we are. So, anyway, we have, Jack Black, of course, did star in the Super Mario Brothers movie, which we talked about in season one of the Zachary and Peaches show. And now Jack Black himself, who voiced Bowser in that movie, he's going to join the live-action video game adaptation of Minecraft. And that is set for release in 2025. Deadline reports he may be playing the role of Steve. And there are other stars attached to this. Jason Momoa is leading this cast there. Emma Myers, Danielle Brooks, and Sebastian Eugene Hansen will also be starring. So, Vertigo will be producing this, along with Mojang and Microsoft and Legendary. And, of course, the film will be also be principally produced by Warner Brothers and distributed by Warner Brothers. So there is that, but another video game adaptation in the form of live action there with Jack Black as part of the cast there, Emma. So what are your thoughts about that?
I don't know how I feel about that, to be honest with you. I mean, I like Jack Black, and I don't necessarily have qualms with the casting. I think it's more of the fact that they're trying to live action-ify Minecraft? I don't know. I mean, because when you think of Minecraft has this very distinct style. It's, you know, it's square. It's all very square. It's, I don't know, at least to me, I think, you know, taking it out of that square kind of format may just make it not necessarily feel like Minecraft. But at the same token, though, if Microsoft and if people who are involved on the Minecraft team are involved with the project, then I, at the very least, some level of fear, I think, has subsided. With me, I mean, not that I'm, like, you know, the biggest Minecraft person on the planet. In fact, I haven't played Minecraft since I was probably about maybe 10 or 11 years old. But, you know, that being said, I feel like, you know, I think just overall, I'd like to withhold my judgment because, you know, I think I get too judgy about live action adaptations of video games. But at the same token, you know, if, you know, I guess some of those worries are at least semi-subsided with the fact that it has a pretty decent cast from what I can see so far, and they have people who either were involved with the overall development and production of the game, or at the very least, you know, really genuinely know the property, then I think, you know, at least for now, Minecraft fans can rest easy. But yeah, that being said, all I gotta say is, Clay, you gotta hop on this train sometime soon. Don't leave me hanging. Jeez Louise. Because, hey, if you don't, then I'll do it for you. I say
so
this
how you,
love in my heart.
So, so then how are you going to do this? Is it that going to be like a fan project? Or how the heck are you going to get yourself involved with this?
I mean, personally, most of that rant was kind of just me being a fan saying, hey, you guys should reiterating the general consensus of the Don't Starve fandom of, you know, hey, let's, you know, go make a show, please. Because, you know, you guys have some serious talent for animation. We would like this to be a thing. But it was also part of me just kind of joking around. don't necessarily know whether or not I have the wherewithal to spearhead a fan project, but at the very least, you know, I'll write some fan spec scripts for myself and, you know, whatever the case is. What Clay decides to do with their properties is their decision. And part of me, you know, even though I just gave this whole please do this kind of desperation driven speech, another part of me is like, you know, not every video game needs an adaptation in film or television. So, and I think, you know, people at Clay are definitely, you know, well aware of that. So honestly, I'd just be happy as long as they just keep continuing to make the animations that they do make. But yeah, that being said, so honestly, I'm torn. I'm torn with how I feel about not only the Minecraft thing, but also, you know, what I'd feel about if my own favorite game were to get an adaptation. But, you know, at the very least, I will one of these days probably just, you know, sit in front of my laptop and write a script-based fanfic just for the fun of it, because, you know, this is obviously the main trend in Hollywood right now, so, you know, I'll just let the chips fall where they may, and I will just continue being Clay's number one supporter regardless.
Of course. So somehow I missed it. I did mention I was keeping an eye on the Critics' Choice Awards this evening as we're recording this. Best Animated Feature goes to Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So, yeah. My pink shapeshifter Nimona didn't win this time. Oh, well. Hopefully we'll have better luck during the Annie Awards. When they do come around at some particular point, I think later this month or in February. But anyway, and also the Oscar nominations, voting closes on the 16th of this month, and they won't be revealed until the 23rd. So we won't find out until whether or not Nimona will have a chance to get Best Animated Feature right there and then. So a little Critics' Choice Awards update after the fact, but there we are. So, Golden Globes, Joe Coy, Filipino comedian Joe Coy, who my parents actually, I'm pretty sure they love, you know, his comedy specials, his stand-up work there. In fact, the family and I, we got to see his movie called Easter Sunday, I think a few years ago. I think for what it was worth, that movie was okay. I think that movie was all right in terms of the representation. I think for the fact, it was meant to be like a comedic film of sorts anyway, with a little bit of a unique element to it, so to speak. But Joe Coy had, of course, this hosting gig at the Golden Globe Awards, and unfortunately, the jokes did not land very well. He kind of joked about, the difference between the NFL and the Golden Globes. You know, there are fewer camera shots of Taylor Swift, and he kind of made some I agree we don't want to put a label on his remarks, Barbie, but the remarks there about, but his remarks about Barbie were somewhat, I guess they were very off-putting to those of us who have seen the film and really have understood the messages and the themes that it exhibited. So it was a little bit strangely, it was just really strange to see him, you know, I guess out of his own particular element there, and now he's, you know, at least he's got like some material for his stand-up, and as recently as a few days ago, start to bash these celebrities who didn't laugh at his jokes and called them marshmallows. So I don't know about that, but it's kind of really a little bit disappointing that you know this particular kind of representation, me being Filipino and all that, Joe Coy also being Filipino. And this is how he kind of represents my nationality there. So it's just it's not a good look, I think. So I don't know, Emma. I'm not sure if you've seen the award ceremony, but it just fell flat. It just fell flat.
Yeah, I didn't see the award ceremony personally myself. In fact, I usually don't really keep tabs on it until the Oscars roll around, typically. And even then, I don't really, you know, I'm not as active and as of a participant in, you know, watching award shows as I was in years past. But yeah, from everything that I've heard and everything that you've told me, it absolutely, everything seemed to definitely fall flat. Especially with remarks about the Barbie movie. I guess kind of in general, that being said, at least from my personal standpoint, the award shows from the past few years have kind of seemed a little bit like a train wreck. I mean, again, this is also, you know, me coming in sort of as an outsider, and you know, viewing the highlights or lowlights, rather, of each ceremony as I typically do. But, you know, that being said, I just genuinely hope that everyone can move on from here, and overall the rest of this award season runs smoother.
Yeah, certainly. So of course, we got we got Critics' Choice Awards going on as we are recording. And of course, other awards ceremonies going on, even the smaller scale ones that are taking place in several other states here. But of course, the big ones, of course, being the Oscars and for television, the Emmys. And then, of course, for animation, we also have the Annie Awards. And we won't really quite find out about, you know, I guess until probably later on, like during the second half of the season, like, who won, who lost, and all that. But by the way, Nimona has 9 nominations for this year's Annie Awards, and that includes Best Animated Feature, and Disney and Pixar were shut out that category for the first time in 32 years. Their films Elemental and Wish were not even considered for the category. Ooh. There. So, yeah. So
that's insane. And I'm proud of the Annies, finally! Giving other people a shot.
Yeah, so so now it's, you know, we got Nimona, we got I think The Boy and the Heron, and then also Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Spider-Man. I think there's one other film that's also nominated, but I can't really quite I don't remember what that film is, but those are the films that I know of that are nominated for Best Animated Feature. Elemental did at least get 6 nominations as part of the Annie Awards for this year anyway, so a bit of consolation prize to Disney there.
Hi. Even if it wasn't considered the best, it's still a relatively good film, so I think it deserves to get at least something. But as long as it doesn't, you know, sweep out the rest of the categories as Disney typically does. But knowing the Annies, I think they'll probably I think at least this year everything has been established as being more of a fair fight. So yeah, let's just, I guess, as I said before, let the chips fall where they may.
Of course. We've got a good show for you this week. We're going to be talking about Leo and, of course, the Traitors. And stay tuned for the first ever edition of the Zachary and Peach's Animation Newsbreak, powered by the World Telegram News, coverage that's transparent, truthful, and timeless. And that's also going to, and we'll also find out, you'll also find out who won Best Anime Feature at the Golden Globe Awards, in case you have not heard about the news. So stay tuned for that. We will be right back.
Next on the Zachary and Peaches Show. It's the last year of elementary school, and perhaps the last year of this class pet's life. Adrian and Emma discuss a talking tuatara named Leo, walking you through the Netflix animated film storyline and what made it click for critics. And later, the Faithfuls in the Scottish Highlands attempt to grab their share of the $250,000 prize in the American version of The Traitors. Emma talks about this Peacock original series hosted by actor Alan Cumming and how they came around to love watching this reality competition show. Coming up after the break. It's time for more animation.
This is kind of like the ultimate journey between Retzko and Haida, because finally the man worked up the courage to ask her out, and she said yes.
More autism.
I've done like a playlist / mixtape on Spotify for it. I've started a fanfic on it that's I'm trying to get off and running here, where Nimona's kind of really trying to deal with the aftermath of the events in the movie.
And more everything else.
Do you honestly you probably know what I'm going to say. Spirit Halloween could open in freaking February, and I would not care. I could be in there all the freaking damn time.
Season 2 of the Zachary and Peaches Show. New episodes every Tuesday on most major podcast platforms.
And now it's time for the Zachary and Peaches Animation News Break, powered by the World Telegram News. Coverage that's transparent, truthful, and timeless.
WTN Animation News, I'm Edvardy Chess. The Boy and the Huron, the Japanese animated movie by Hayao Miyazaki, won the award for Best Animated Feature Film at the Golden Globes. The movie got rapid success at the box office, with the biggest opening for a Studio Ghibli film, surpassing the record they set in 2004 with the movie Howl's Moving Castle. The co-founder of Studio Ghibli reflected on this news, saying, quote, "I am very happy to hear the news that The Boy the Huron has received an award at the historic Golden Globe Awards. This is the first Golden Globe awarded to a Studio Ghibli film, and it is a very special feeling." Layoffs are expected at Pixar throughout 2024 due to overstaffing. Numbers floating around on the internet say that there will be redundancies up to 20%. However, official numbers and figures are undecided. This news comes following a decrease in revenue at Disney, namely stemming from their work on Disney Plus, and a cut in advertising revenue for the ABC television network. And the independent animated series Hazbin Hotel will be making its debut on Prime Video on January 19th, 2024. The show's pilot released on YouTube in October 2019, sitting at 93 million views at the time of this report. A season 2 is said to be in production. And that's the news for this week as of Tuesday, January 16th. The news continues on our main news podcast, which runs every Friday at 5 a.m. Eastern. Just search WTN News Audio wherever you get your podcasts. You can also get the latest headlines all the time at www.theworldtelegram.news. From myself and the entire WTN News team, we'll be at a safe and pleasant MLK Day. Back to Adrian and Emma with the Zachary and Peaches Show.
This Zachary and Peaches Animation News Break has been a presentation of the World Telegram News. For more coverage that's transparent, truthful, and timeless on national, global, and tech news, log on to theworldtelegram.news and subscribe to WTN News Audio wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Emma here. Stay tuned for this week's question. Spotify listeners can reply through this platform's Q&A feature on their mobile device to have their say. You can also reply on Adrian's profile at AdrianMata26 on DeviantArt and Tumblr to this episode's recap entry on both platforms, or through our show's Instagram and Threads accounts at Zachary and Peaches with your thoughts. We can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Keeping animation in the conversation. This is the Zachary and Peaches Show.
Alongside Emma Settles, I'm Adrian Monta. We're back with the Zachary and Peaches Show, and we're taking a little visit to my home state of Florida. Well, I guess my current home state, anyway. And we go to Fort Lauderdale Elementary School, which is the home of a talking reptile named Leo. And that is one of the most recent animated films to come out of the Netflix streaming service.
Yeah, I actually gave this movie a watch initially around Thanksgiving. I believe it was either the day before or the day after or something along those lines. And it was kind of one of those movies that, you know, one of those movies that your parents just put on for the sake of putting on. And it was kind of like that for us. Like, it was something that mom thought would be cute, and she just put it on. I'm like, oh, you know, whatever, it's an animated movie, it's all that matters, you know, it should be fine. However, this movie, I'm not ashamed to say it, it absolutely surprised me with how well it was just done in general, not just with, you know, from an animation standpoint, but also from a story standpoint. And obviously, you know, even though it's a 2 hour long, basically a 2 hour long movie, you'd still think that, you know, it's a story about a class pet. There's, you know, only so much you can talk about with it, which is kind of half true. But at the same token, though, even though, you know, I still was able to, while watching it, come up with 5 interesting points about this movie, and especially about the titular character Leo. So that being said, Jared, why don't you take it away with your lovely, lovely narrator voice, and let our wonderful listeners know what Leo specifically is about.
Yeah, right. Here's Jared.
Comedian and actor Adam Sandler lends his voice to a talking tuatara named Leonardo, who lives with Squirtle the Turtle, voiced by Bill Burr, as class pets inside a Fort Lauderdale elementary school. With unfulfilled dreams of going to the Everglades, compounded by existential dread, he is taken home for the weekend by Summer, a student of Mrs. Selena's class, currently being covered by a strict substitute teacher named Miss Malkin. While trying to escape, he accidentally reveals to Summer that he can talk, and Leo gives her his wisdom and advice for her troubles. Soon after, he gives other advice to her classmates that take him home in the weekends that follow. But with all the attention Leo is getting for his ability to give advice and comfort to each of the students in class, can the class pet get himself out of his own trouble before things head south?
Thank you, Jared, and it's on to the rest of the discussion there. So, this story kind of has a bit of has lower stakes than, a typical, I don't want to say typical, but, one of the other animated films there, like, a little bit lower stakes compared to some of the other animated movies there. So what about it, Emma? You know, how important is it to have, you know, stories like this?
I think it's very important to have stories like this, because the fact that, I mean, normally, whenever you think animated movie, you wind up thinking about, oh, you know, this character basically you have a situation where it's, you know, a character is either transported into a different world or has to save the world from something or save a specific part of their world from something, or, and, you know, battles villains and meets allies and, you know, typical standard hero's journey kind of tropiness. Which is fine, because the hero's journey works, and the hero's journey is basically, you know, for the most part, at least used to some degree as a model for all different types of filmmaking. Both animated films and live-action films will often use this model. But at the same token, though, I think it's very fascinating to have a movie that is very low stakes, because, you know, Leo, okay, you have a standard plot line of, you know, talking animal, people don't know he talks until he talks, you know? However, you know, there's no super cataclysmic event that's gonna happen, like, you know, it's not like the school is gonna be invaded by the FBI because they have a talking lizard. No. Or, you know, Leo has to save the world from an asteroid that's going to hit Earth. It's not one of those kind of movies. And I think that is quite lovely and quite refreshing. I mean, I think in general, one of the things that I love about this movie is because it focuses on such a small scale. And because it focuses on such a small scale, you can kind of not only, see how the characters' personal reactions relate to the situation that's going on with Leo, but also you personally can at least, in some respects, take a look back on experiences you had when you were, you know, in elementary school. Once you see just how important these pets, especially Leo, are to these kids, because you're making a story that's important to a select group of characters, doesn't necessarily mean that the story isn't important to the audience. And I think in general, you know, I think because it is such a smaller scale, it's more relatable that way. Because as I said before, you can very easily put yourself in one of the kids' shoes in the film, especially if you had a class pet or a pet, period, yourself, you know, growing up or even now, that you really, really connect with. And, you know, sharing in the level of love and care that these kids have for Leo and reflecting it back into your own past experiences. I think just having something that is only important to a select amount of characters makes for an overall story that feels not only more authentic, but also it's a way to show young filmmakers, too, that having a story that isn't grandiose is okay. I guess sort of relating back to my school experiences, specifically in animation school, I had professors that would specifically look at us and say, hey, you know, it's okay if what the story you're trying to tell is a small story, because in reality, there are no small stories. And part of me back then kind of didn't really believe the professor that said that. I mean, as a filmmaker myself, I tend to focus on a lot of smaller stories, specifically with my first two films that I made over the course of my college career. And, you know, that being said, I felt like I was, you know, maybe not with the program, or, you know, I was doing something wrong. I'm wanting to tell a story that was more personal, not just for the characters, but for myself. However, you know, after making these kinds of movies, I kind of started to see what they were talking about. And now that I'm also seeing, you know, big name releases, you know, creating stories that are small, but nonetheless entertaining and nonetheless heartfelt, that I think it overall it just makes me feel validated as a filmmaker and as someone who hopes to, you know, get into this industry professionally in general. But, you know, again, that's just my two cents about it. And as I keep saying, you know, not everything has to follow a standard set of rules or tropes. I mean, the first rule of filmmaking is, well, I guess the last rule of filmmaking is, you know the rules so that when it comes time to break them, you can break them with grace and with ease. And, you know, even though this is still very much, you know, a typical animated film, because it doesn't necessarily follow the grandiose kind of cataclysmic big event kind of philosophy that a lot of animated movies share, you know, I think it kind of does a little ha-ha to that expectation. And I think it worked incredibly well, and I think it worked ultimately to the film's favor.
On that particular note, let's go on to the storyline there. So basically, you know, we see Leo the reptile talking to a Tara and an eternal named Squirtle as class pets, and Miss Selena's classroom with of course these students there, and of course it's the start of fifth. It's, of course, this film kind of chronicles, you know, the entire school year of this particular fifth grade class. And then when it's revealed, you know, Miss Salinas is having a baby, there's gonna be a substitute teacher over there, and of course that's Miss Malkin. And of course, she kinda really institutes this bit of unique thing, I would say, of having one of the students take home one of the class pets for the weekend. And so it kind of really falls on the summer to kind of really, you know, kind of kick that into motion. And of course, you know, Leo tries to escape, and then he gets caught, and then of course he then tries to give advice to Summer, and then, of course, it kind of really snowballs from there as more of these students, her fellow classmates, start taking Leo home for the weekend for themselves. And, you know, eventually he starts to give out his own wisdom and advice to these students. And in the process, he does tell them, you know, you can only talk to me and all that, but, you know, there's a bit of an alibi, so to speak, where he claims that he only talks to this particular special kid here and there. In fact, he tells all the students there. So what about that? What about that journey? Between selfishness and selflessness. You know, this whole ping pong journey that he has, and giving advice to these students, but also in the process, kind of not quite being as faithful to them as they would hope.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the really fascinating things about Leo as a character, I mean, obviously, again, going back to the whole standards of filmmaking sort of thing, you know, most movies have a main character that undergoes some sort of change throughout the film, and this film is no different. Leo starts out, obviously, as, you know, wanting to make the most out of his life. He is, like, what, 75, 76 years old? And he's...
Actually, he's 74. It turns out he's 74 there.
74. I keep forgetting how old specifically he is. I want to make the poor lizard older than he actually is.
Because there's a particular detail in the film there. One of the adults says that one adult's in there, like, during this parents' night, I guess, at this particular school. One of them kind of remarks, kind of claims that these particular reptiles, these Duataras, only live up to like 75 years old. So there's that to consider there for Leo, and it kind of really causes a bit of existential dread for him.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Thank you for that, Adrian. You summed that up quite actually, probably even more well than I could. So thank you for that. But yeah, I mean, Leo has been hit with this existential dread, kind of this fear of, oh my God, what am I doing with my life? I need to go out there and make the most of it. And here I am just sitting in a cage in a classroom, doing nothing when I could be, living the good life out in the Everglades. And, initially that's his goal, is to escape and to, spend the rest of his natural life in the Everglades. However long that may be, whether it's a year or 10 years or however long, he doesn't care. As long as he's, free and in the Everglades. Over the course of the movie, however, he gets so wrapped up in helping these kids that becomes his goal, that, he kind of abandons wanting to be released in favor of, maintaining being the class pet and being the favorite class pet in particular, which causes a strain on whatever relationship he had with Squirtle. It was a little bit tense to begin with, as we see in the movie. But, that being said, even with following that specific format, Leo has a lot of mental turmoil, because not only is he fighting this secondary, fighting his overall change in goals, because even though he's slowly but surely recognizing that, maybe living out in the Everglades wasn't, what I wanted to do to begin with. Maybe I was just yearning for a deeper connection with the kids that walk out of this classroom every year. So I might as well start now. Even though obviously he didn't say it like that specifically, or didn't realize it until after more than one kid took him home. That being said, not only was he fighting that, but he was also sort of fighting within himself specifically about, as you said, this ping pong effect between being selfish and being selfless. Because the selfish aspect of him is obviously, I want to escape. But it also kind of evolves with him as his goals change. Because, he wants to, even though he wants to be selfless and continue to offer his advice and allow the kids to feel special, at the same token, though, he also, sets it up, this tangled web, this big, this massive lie that he can only speak to one special kid. And he's talked to the whole entire class, and the whole entire class is obviously, keeping a secret that Leo talked to them. But, at the same time, after they found out, obviously, Leo obviously, had a lot of explaining to do, and obviously hurt the kids by keeping that. But in addition to that, he also, even though he was willing to give advice to the substitute in order to, how can I connect with my students better? And ultimately he helped her with that. But at the same token, though, he was also sort of, at least a portion of him, was satisfied with taking pretty much the entire credit for just how well the fifth grade class, or at least that specific fifth grade class, was doing academically, emotionally, socially, just the overall thriving of the class. He kind of wanted to exclusively take on that, whether he wanted to specifically, you know, wanted to explicitly or not. But he kind of took on, you know, he kind of hogged the spotlight, which is also, you know, the reason why Miss Malkin eventually, is tired with his nonsense, so she dumps him out in the Everglades. So, you know, that being said, I think as the story continued to progress, Leo, obviously, I think, was dealing with more than one dilemma at the same time. I mean, in most movies, obviously, the main character usually has a main problem, and then little small problems, you know, form here and branch out here and there, specifically with subplot. Or subplot, you know, directly eventually ties back into a character, so it's kind of like a boomerang. They're kind of getting, you know, hit in the face with the boomerang. But at the same token, though, I feel like in this movie specifically, Leo is more directly connected between his internal fight within himself, obviously, of, you know, wanting to escape and wanting to be a class pet and be faithful to the kids he's, you know, the kids he sees every year. And then on top of that, he also has this sort of dilemma with, you know, taking too much credit for the success of the students, as well as trying to make all the other kids, you know, feel like they're the one special kid. And if things possibly, you know, would have gotten worse, they could have all had the potential of turning on each other, which they kind of did, but eventually, obviously, kind of reversed that and, you know, rightfully took their frustrations back onto Leo. So, you know, that being said, I think with ultimately having the main character initiate each of the subplots, I think, was something, or directly initiate, rather, the subplots, I think was a rather fascinating overall situation for this character to be in. And again, back to the whole small story argument, it just shows that a small story can still be fascinating as long as you have a fascinating multidimensional main character.
Leave it up to Adam Sandler to have such a good, like, believable and it's, I think at times, I think, relatable performance as well, you know, trying to keep these children's spirits up and, you know, making sure, you know, they get through the school year and all that. So there is that. So we did kind of make light of Leo's little plight there. That rhymed. We made light of Leo's plight of, you know, him having lived up to 74 years old, going on to 75, and then, of course, he hasn't really done a lot, you know, in his life, aside from living in a glass container, and, of course, you know, just kind of really, you know, just kind of really being the class pet he is anyway. So what is it about, you know, making the most out of your life as it is exemplified in this film?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to go back to the golden phrase of the night. I think this movie really embodies that sort of let the chips fall where they may. Because, you know, we're all handed unique circumstances in life. None of us live the same path. And I think this movie does an excellent job at illustrating that, obviously, you know, with how each of the kids live and with the school dynamic being explored within the personalities of these kids and their, you know, their direct connection, obviously, with Leo and with each other. But you know, at the same time, I think if we specifically focus on Leo's sort of situation, you know, obviously he feels like with this, you know, existential dread being placed on him, that, you know, oh crap, he sort of has that, you know, that moment of, I'm wasting my life. All I've been doing has been, you know, is been sitting in this cage, staring at people for 74 years of my life. And for all I know, I'm, you know, only going to live to be 75. So that being said, you know, after, so, you know, this year is the year. It's it. I'm going to, you know, if I'm gonna die next year, I might as well, you know, do all the crazy wild things that I wanted to, you know, that I didn't realize I wanted to do until now. Which I've obviously, he didn't necessarily want to do them in the first place, because, you know, through trial and error and just the natural progression of the story, he realizes that, you know, where he wants to be is exactly where he is. But, you know, with that realization, I think, you know, this, overall, this movie, I think, just addresses the fact that you don't necessarily need to live a big, grandiose kind of life, and that ultimately, you know, with the life you're given, you should take opportunities not just to examine it and to critique it and to think about all the ways that you want it to change or would like it to change, but also, you know, realize and be thankful for all the good things that have happened along the way. And just, you know, in general, sometimes you don't really know what you need until it, you know, comes back to you and slaps you in the face. And I think that that's kind of what happens to Leo over the course of the film, is he realizes that he's where he is for a reason. And that reason obviously is because those kids needed him more than ever. And ultimately, I think that's just, at least in my opinion, I think that's a pretty good way to look at life, because, you know, regardless of what your, you know, your religious or spiritual beliefs or whatever is, you know, if you kind of hold, or, you know, general life philosophy, if you kind of hold this mentality that, you know, things happen for a reason, whatever reason that is up to you, obviously. But as long as, you know, there is a specific reason, then you can ultimately create the meaning of your life. You know, again, my personal philosophy is we create our own meaning. So that being said, once you realize that, you know, you are where you are for a reason, that's when you can sort of start to realize, you know, okay, what are the good things about the situation? What are the negatives? What can I change? And what has helped so far? And, you know, I'm kind of leave it to me to get philosophical about a movie about a talking lizard, but I think just the long and short of it is that this movie, I think, really focuses on, you know, you never really know what you need sometimes until you need it, as well as, you know, the thing that you know, you don't necessarily have to go about changing your life in big dramatic ways all the time for, you know, for the fear of missing out or for you know, existential dread or whatever the case is. You know, just sometimes you just got to go with the flow, and you've got to realize that the people around you rely on you more than you think. So once you start kind of living for, you know, living to help other people instead of just focusing solely on yourself, then that's when you can truly create the meaning of your life and realize what you're supposed to be doing. If you're not doing it already, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. I mean, to kind of really take it to a personal, I guess a personal standpoint, it gets me, what you said there kind of really got me worried about, you know, why am I working at Universal? Why am I there? So it really does put into perspective, you know, why did I choose this? You know, at least at this particular point in my life, you know, I guess personally, after what happened at my last job, I kind of really felt like I needed to redeem myself. And I wasn't really, you know, because I wasn't really expecting myself to go back into the theme park industry, like, or even to the attractions, you know, that soon there, like, because I wanted just to get, like, at least a retail job or work in the grocery store somewhere. But it was just kind of really a little bit, you know, it just really does put into perspective for me, you know, I like going to theme parks, you know, as, a, you know, growing up and, you know, being an adult now, if I feel like I still have a bit this childlike wonder in me, you know, with, you know, going on the roller coasters, eating all the food that I would like, and, you know, watching all the shows and whatnot, and everything. And then, you know, and of course, working in the industry now, this is, of course, you know, come November, this will be the sixth year that I have worked. This will kind of really be the sixth year that I've worked in theme parks. And, you know, it's just kind of really a matter of, wanting to, you know, get people about with their day, making sure, they get what they need and all that, and, you know, just trying to let them have fun and all that, because that's what they came here for, because that's what they would like, that's what they want to do. And, you know, it's just the nature of the job that, you know, you have to provide that for them. So it's just, you know, on some days it is a little bit harder than others, but sometimes, you know, what I do, it kind of makes it a little bit more worthwhile. How I'm handling things kind of makes it all the worthwhile, you know. And just, of course, depends on the days and how I'm feeling and all that. So it's just a very interesting thing to think about there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just ultimately, I think just in general, this whole situation can be summed up with, you know, we're all, you know, we all have our own unique circumstances, and, you know, where we are where we are for a reason. And I think just, you know, reminding yourself that, you know, you don't necessarily have to exclusively live for yourself, and ultimately happiness comes from being kind and supportive of other people.
Yeah, especially when it comes to supporting my coworkers as well, because I do remember, you know, supporting, you know, one of my coworkers, you know, we had, of course, this fashion show, I think during the summer of last year in 2023, and, you know, I just wanted to be there and support them and, just be there and just enjoy the show there. But yeah, it was just, you know, just wanting to be there and, you know, supporting, you know, somebody that, you know, I love working with, that's also something that, you know, to take in as well. So, yeah, there is that. So, we have a couple more things to get to here, but I'm going to combine them all into, I'm going to try and combine them all into, like, one last point here. So the fact that Leo kind of really brings to light the importance of issues that kids are facing, like, in elementary schools, you know, the adults, you know, making light of, you know, their childhoods, but whether or not you're kind of really in with the cool kids or not, it is kind of a little bit difficult, you know, growing up and all that, So it's all the more important, you know, to have, you know, somebody you can talk to, somebody you can trust, you know, to confide in your feelings with. So whether or not, you know, they're human or not is kind of really a bit irrelevant. It's not just a bit irrelevant, just irrelevant in general there. So what about the importance of kids' issues and then just the importance of talking about, you know, those issues and other issues in general with someone that you know and love and trust and all that?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously one of the things this movie does insanely well, again, is talking about the issues that kids face. And again, I feel like a lot of people often sort of, you know, they'll look at their kids and think to yourself, oh, you know, you're a kid, just what, you know, what possible problems are you facing right now? Like, you know, just wait till you're older and you have to, you know, worry about paying, you know, worry about getting and keeping a job and, you know, filing your taxes and all the, you know, stuff that causes stress in your adult life. But you know, that being said, that I think that mentality, I think, is very ignorant to a lot of the struggles that kids face, specifically surrounding issues with self-worth, with confidence, with making and keeping friends. And I think a lot of this is at least partially explored in this movie, and it also shows you that, you know, even the most rich and popular girl has her own issues, specifically surrounding the fact that, you know, her family thinks it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, and she feels like she has to kind of perform a level of perfection and a level of greatness because of the super, you know, full of themselves nature of the rest of her family. So, yeah, that being said, having someone that you could confide in order to, that takes your issues seriously and that thinks about, you know, it takes your issues into context and is able to directly empathize with them, I think is highly important, especially if you're a kid. And ultimately, if you have someone in your life who you're able to look at and say, hey, I'm really struggling with X, Y, and Z, and I would like some, you know, advice or I like some support, then, you know, if you're not being invalidated, then when you're older, that being said, you will continue to seek help and you will continue to recognize when you're not doing okay. And you will continue to reach out to the people that you love and that love you in return for support. And therefore, your life will get at least somewhat of a fraction of a bit easier because you've built a support system from day one. And, you know, that being said, I think Leo in this film realizes, at least later on in the film, that he is an invaluable support system to the kids that he works with. And he realizes that all of their worries and all of their anxieties are not just, you know, petty kid nonsense. They are legitimate things that they're concerned about. And by taking them seriously, it makes the kids feel seen and heard. And once someone feels seen and heard, then they truly can have all of their basic needs met. So Leo is doing, as I keep saying, he is providing an incredible resource to these kids, because once they realize that they can talk to someone about their issues, then they don't have to worry about that feeling of being invalidated and letting their problems and their worries stew over and ultimately, you know, lead into more serious consequences in adulthood. So that being said, I think Leo himself establishes a lot of really good behaviors, not only in, you know, helping kids realize that he makes light of their issues, but he also realizes that they are important to them and that they need to be resolved in a way that is not just, you know, constructive, but also in a way that makes them feel seen and feel heard and you know, feel loved. So, yeah, I mean, overall, just in general, all of these things, it starts when you're young. And if you truly live in an environment that is, you know, supportive and loving, then, you know, you will most likely continue to carry that with you for the rest of your life. So if anything, you know, this relationship that Leo has with these kids is setting them up not just for success in fifth grade, but also success for possibly the rest of their lives.
And I think that's really, you know, especially important as, you know, they continue to develop, these fifth graders, these students, and, you know, their brains continue to develop over the course of, you know, their early childhood into young adulthood, that it's very important that, you know, they have somebody to talk to, they have somebody, you know, that can, you know, comfort them, you know, through the struggles, give them advice. Yeah, absolutely. So, Leo's one good reptile, so to speak, and, you know, Adam Sandler did a fantastic job, you know, lending his voice to this talking to Atara, and I apologize for saying that incorrectly, if that is the case there. But, yeah, pretty much about it. So I think, have we already talked about how the film ends, Emma, or have we not done yet? Because I would love to cover that.
Briefly, I guess sort of in we did mention briefly, I at the very least stopped off at the fact that, you know, Leo gets dropped off at the Everglades and he, quote unquote, you know, lives his dream thanks to Miss Malkin being frustrated with him. But overall, I keep saying that this is a small story, but big things can still happen within small stories. Basically, the kids hijack the school bus that takes them to an amusement park trip that they won over the course of the year, and they just head out the Everglades and rescue their best friend. So, yeah. And then Leo continues to be a happy, healthy class pet for the rest of his natural life. And obviously, we also find out that, you know, Leo will most likely live to be even older than he is already, so that his existential worries were very much not necessarily based in fact. So that being said, Leo feels more confident about the life he is living and happily accepts the job once again as being the class pet.
Absolutely. And, you know, I actually only got through like halfway through the film here. I think like 63 minutes of it. I think like an hour and 3 minutes of this film before we had to record this episode this week. But just basing it on what I've seen, you know, I guess the musical element kind of surprised me a little bit. I wasn't even expecting it to be a musical, and
it wasn't.
Yeah,
either.
But it was. Yeah.
But I think it was cute. I think it, I mean, it just, obviously, it draws on the typical, quote-unquote, animated movie sort of logic and stylings, but also throws so many, so many unexpected elements in with this as well, not just with, you know, the nature of the story itself and with a lot of the comedy, but also just, you know, with story structure in general. So if anything, you know, the movie turned out to be absolutely nothing like I expected it to be, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised. And honestly, if you haven't already checked out Leo, I think you probably should, because if anything, it's a cute watch. It's very heartwarming. It's very charming. And I think you will really enjoy it.
Leo is currently streaming now on Netflix, the animated musical film starring Adam Sandler and Bill Burr, streaming on that particular service. When we do return here on the Zachary and Peaches Show, we're going to be talking about The Traitors, the American version of The Traitors, as hosted by Scottish actor Alan Cumming, and you know, how you kind of really came around to like this series, Emma. So we'll see you on the other side of this break here. We'll be right back.
Coming up on the Zachary and Peaches Show, it's a game of werewolf among the faithful and the traitors. Emma discusses the American version of the British reality competition and how they fell in love with the show. The game of $250,000 next.
Here now is this week's question. In the Netflix animated film, Leo, the titular talking lizard left his mark on the fifth grade class and undoubtedly gave all the students a lifetime's worth of happy memories. This week, we're asking you, if you had a pet growing up, what was your fondest memory of them? Spotify listeners, let us know now through the Q&A feature on your mobile device. Otherwise, reply to this episode's recap entry on DeviantArt and Tumblr through Adrian's profile on both platforms, at AdrianMata26, or to our show's Instagram and Threads accounts, at Zachary and Peaches. The Zachary and Peaches Show resumes in just a moment.
Autism, and now everything else. The Zachary and Peaches Show continues.
We're back with more of the Zachary and Peaches Show and a bit of a competition show about backstabbing, lying, and trickery in the form of a familiar party game turned into a bit of a, I guess I would say, little more high stakes than Leo was there. But it's called The Traitors. Yeah, it's called The Traitors, and here's Jared with that synopsis.
Scottish actor Alan Cumming hosts this American reality competition series on the NBC Universal streaming service Peacock, produced in tandem with the British series of the same name for the BBC, and based on the Dutch TV series De Verraders, itself structured similarly to the party game Mafia, or as Emma would prefer, Werewolf. At a castle in the Scottish Highlands, 20 contestants compete to win a share of the $250,000 prize. Among the faithful are the namesake traitors, who seek to steal away the money for themselves. Players can be murdered by the traitors, or banished after the round table, after voting following the day's activities, where money can be added to the prize as part of a mission. Once the game dwindles down to the remaining four contestants, the final challenge is initiated, where they are given a choice to either end the game or banish another player. If all players remaining are faithful, the prize fund is distributed evenly to each of them. If any traitors are left standing, they win the entirety of the money.
Thank you once again, Jared. And Emma, you have you've kind of really seen yourself, you know, watch this show as of late, which is currently streaming on Peacock. So what about this series, Jared? What's so unique about this particular competition?
Yeah, I mean... Knowing me, I am a sucker for a good competition show, as, you know, my love affair with Halloween Wars and Holiday Wars and, you know, all of that lovely stuff that I've talked about in episodes past could possibly suggest. But, yeah, overall, I mean, the second I saw the commercials for this series, I kind of immediately fell in love with the concept with it. I vividly remember being young and playing games like Mafia and like Werewolf at birthday parties and at, like, you know, summer day camps that I would go to, and getting to see it, as you said, on such a larger scale, I think was incredibly fascinating to me. Plus, just in general, the show, I mean, the reason why my mom was really drawn to it as well, she obviously kind of started this whole love affair with this competition series, is that, at least in the American version of this series, which is, you know, the one we're talking about, my mom occasionally will watch reality TV because she just finds it funny and fun. So a lot of, at least a couple of her favorite reality stars were in this, I believe Kate from Below Deck, which is one of her favorite reality personalities, was on the first series, season rather, as well as, Cherie from, Survivor. And, my mom and my sister and I would all, you know, when we were much, much younger, would actually have nights where we would all watch Survivor together. As well as shows like, you know, The Amazing Race and Face Off and other competition shows like that. In addition to all the seasonal cooking shows and stuff that we also enjoyed watching. So that being said, having some familiar faces that my mom enjoyed, as well as regular people, because I believe the whole goal was that it was kind of split in two between reality TV personalities and just, you know, regular day-to-day people being hosted in this eerie Scottish castle, which was just so cool. And, you know, seeing how they played off each other and got along or didn't get along and formed alliances and, you know, how each of them was like playing each other like a fiddle. It was just, overall, it's just such a fun and fascinating dynamic, specifically because of the fact that you basically have two ways of getting eliminated. you can, as Jared suggests, you can either be murdered by the traitors. Obviously, you're not literally killed. You're just, you know, you receive a letter. Hey, you're dead. Go leave. as well as banishment, where, you know, people can sit at the round table and discuss who they think a traitor is, and therefore vote them off. So, you know, that being said, that kind of dynamic of watching these people trying to figure out who it truly is, the one that's tricking them, is just, in general, fascinating. Even, I think another thing that's really interesting about it is the fact that the viewer is... You know how on a lot of these competition shows, the viewer is kind of going through the motions with the people on the show who are competing? In this show, we are told from the start who the initial three traitors are, and we're basically kind of just watching the faithfuls, you know, try to figure it out for themselves who they think traitors are. And in this series, this season in particular, you know, faithfuls were turning on faithfuls like the drop, you know, at the drop of a hat. People were, you know, not getting along. And that being said, it kind of quickly turned into, you know, can we vote off the most problematic person, you know, the person who's causing, you know, the most quote-unquote chaos in the castle, as the traitors would put it. Meanwhile, the actual traitors are hiding in plain sight, explicitly saying that to other people that they're faithfuls, and, you know, and trying to get them to be sort of under a sort of alliance with them. And that's another reason how, I'm not going to say who specifically wins this first season if you're interested and want to check it out, but the person who won this first season was a traitor. So that's all I'm going to say. But people did not suspect that this person was a traitor, which is ultimately how you need to be playing the game. I think to some degree, I don't know whether or not it's fascinating that we are ahead of the actual players, but at the same token, though, I feel like with the level of drama and with the level of impact, it might serve the, at least, you know, from my perspective, it may serve the audience well if they hid who the traitors were as best as they possibly could. But then again, you know, that's just, again, my own perspective. I see what they're trying to do and what they at least have to some level succeeded in with immediately revealing who the traitors are. But, I mean, just even still, even with the mystery completely figured out for ourselves, it's still an incredibly fun and bumpy ride, especially as you don't know every week who is going to be eliminated until the very next episode, which is ultimately what, you know, makes this binge-worthy, at least from my standpoint. Plus, in general, you know, another thing that makes it so interesting is that a lot of the challenges that, you know, that the competitors have to do, they're often very macabre in nature, which is, I mean, if you know me and you know my love affair with the macabre, you know I'm going to really love and enjoy a series that kind of plays on that. I mean, I vividly remember there were challenges where competitors were buried alive. There were challenges where competitors were locked in a room filled with rats and had to escape said room full of rats. There were, you know, there was a creepy carnival setting where you were kind of strapped onto this creepy wheel of truth slash wheel of death, where you had to play a game while hanging upside down. There was a game where the room where you were locked in a room and you had to, you know, figure out what was different after the quote unquote ghosts of murdered players changed up the objects in the room. So, you know, that being said, I think it really plays into the spooky, eerie kind of aspect of a good murder mystery, which is kind of what this game is in the long run. So, yeah, just in general, it's a wild ride. It's a lot of fun. And I believe the second season came out relatively recently. So, that being said, I am absolutely going to give that a watch very soon. Plus, in general, just as a quick little thing, but as I said, you know, my mom had a lot of favorite reality players on the first season. Another reason why I selected this to be our SCD this week is that tomorrow is my mom, well, at least the 15th, rather, because it'll be, I believe, the 16th whenever, you know, later in this week when this is released. But my mom's birthday is the 15th. So, that being said, I wanted to do something nice for my mom, and this was something that we really enjoyed watching together, and we had a lot of fun just dissecting the relationships between each of the players, as well as just watching these twisted and fun games that these people had to play each day. And I mean, we just enjoyed watching it together, and if anything, this is just my little nod to you, Mom. So, yeah, happy birthday. I love you.
Can I call her Mama Peaches?
Yes, yes, you may.
Happy birthday, Mama Peaches. Well, I guess since this will be out later in the week, it will be probably happy belated birthday, but anyway. The Traitors is streaming now on Peacock. The second season had already premiered on January 12th, so, and there will be new episodes, I think, right up until early March. So, that's a heck of a way to kind of really get started there. We're kind of really on the same, I guess this second half of the season there, it's kind of really on a, we're kind of really on the same, I guess we're on the same, I don't know, the same timeline of sorts from, you know, between us and the, and then, of course, the American Traitors series. But yeah, just something a little fun to point out there.
That's cool.
Yeah. That's going to do it for the Zachary and Peaches Show this week. Next week, it's going to be, we're going to be heading out to Nice and Friendly Corners and discuss about Sheriff Kelly's Wild West. And can't wait to discuss about that. In the meantime, though, for right now, I'm Adrian Mata.
And I'm Emma Settles.
And we'll see you next week for the Zachary and Peaches Show, folks. Goodbye.
Bye.
This is Jared Harris speaking for the Zachary and Peaches Show. Produced, edited, and co-hosted by Adrian Mata and co-hosted with Emma Settles. The Zachary and Peaches Show is a Sackland original podcast.